Whether it's remodeling a home or building a skyscraper, you can't be successful without a plan. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll continues his study in the book of Nehemiah. It's a series we're calling Hand Me Another Brick. Before grabbing his tools, Nehemiah developed a blueprint for rebuilding the wall around Jerusalem. And no matter where your leadership is applied, whether at the office or in the home, you'll appreciate the timeless wisdom on establishing a plan. To set the foundation for today's message, we'll begin by reading the story from Nehemiah chapter 2.
Let's open our Bibles today to the second chapter of the book of Nehemiah. While Nehemiah was carrying his great burden for the people and the conditions in Jerusalem, he began the tough job of rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem by getting on his knees, asking God for compassion and understanding in the heart of King Artaxerxes. Today we will see God's gracious answer to that prayer of Nehemiah, and how God launched an incredible reconstruction project. However, before we read the passage, I want to comment on the obvious, the great theological tension between God's sovereignty and our human responsibility. Some ask, is God really sovereign? The answer, of course, is yes. Well, the other question, are we really responsible to act? Another, absolutely yes. But we can stretch this tension between divine sovereignty and human responsibility to its breaking point if we try to fully comprehend the power of prayer as it relates to God's predetermined plan. Today, from the life of Nehemiah, we will learn what he learned, that problem projects and problem people stand within the jurisdiction of our sovereign God. God can soften the hardest heart in answer to the prayers of his saints. And when he does that, we must be ready and willing to act, to step forward based on faith, to begin to accomplish what the Lord sets before us, regardless of the opposition we're facing. And now follow along as I read for you the first 11 verses of Nehemiah chapter 2. And it came about in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, that wine was before him. And I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had not been sad in his presence. So the king said to me, "Why is your face sad, though you are not sick? This is nothing but sadness of heart." Then I was very much afraid. I said to the king, "Let the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies desolate, and its gates have been consumed by fire?" Then the king said to me, "What would you request?" So I prayed to the God of heaven. I said to the king, "If it please the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it." Then the king said to me, the queen sitting beside him, "How long will your journey be? And when will you return?" So it pleased the king to send me, and I gave him a definite time. And I said to the king, "If it please the king, let letters be given me for the governors of the provinces beyond the river, that they may allow me to pass through until I come to Judah. And a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress, which is by the temple, for the wall of the city, and for the house to which I will go." And the king granted them to me, because the good hand of my God was on me. Then I came to the governors of the provinces beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent with me officers of the army and horsemen. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard about it, it was very displeasing to them that someone had come to seek the welfare of the sons of Israel. So I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days.
You're listening to Insight for Living. To dig deeper into the book of Nehemiah with Chuck Swindoll, be sure to download his Searching the Scriptures studies by going to insightworld.org/studies. And now the message from Chuck titled, Preparation for a Tough Job.
I'd like to dedicate the message to three different kinds of people here this morning, all of whom are represented. Those of you that have had trouble with your boss in the past, those of you that are now having trouble, and those of you that have plans in the immediate future to have trouble with your boss. And some of you are not employed, and therefore I must say this would apply to any stratum of society. If you're a student, it could be your teacher. If you're a teacher, it could be your principal. Your principal, it could be the superintendent. If you're in the military, it could be your commanding officer. If you're in some Christian work, it could be the founder or president or your immediate superior. Whoever it may be, it applies. If you're not working, it could be your parent. I made the statement in the early service that no matter what area you may live or in which realm you may be working, it is not always easy to work with your superior. Now, whatever may be your realm of work, you have come to the problem that we're going to be talking about this morning, and that is facing a difficulty with your superior. How do you handle it? I want to begin by reminding you of the motto we gave from Hudson Taylor's pen last Sunday. It goes like this. It is possible to move men through God by prayer alone. That appropriately fits all that I have to say today. You will come to the place where you will face the impossible inevitability that you cannot change your boss. The only answer that God has for you at that point is prayer. Let me show you why. Let's come to Nehemiah 2 through the side door. Proverbs 21. Look at the first verse with me from the 21st chapter of Proverbs. This is an interesting proverb for a couple of reasons. First of all, it is a comparative proverb. That is, in the proverb, something is likened to something else. And most comparative proverbs end with the comparison and leave it at that. But this proverb comes to a conclusion in what could be called the declarative part of the proverb. The first part is comparative. The last part is declarative. In other words, it concludes with a timeless principle that is appropriate for any age. Look at first the comparison. The king's heart is like channels of water in the hand of the Lord. The Hebrew sentence doesn't begin with the king's heart, but begins with the word channels. But the original term does not mean channels. Originally, the verb means to split into several parts, to divide. And in noun form, it has reference to small ditches that move from a main reservoir of water out into flat lands that need to be filled with water. They are thirsty. We call these irrigation ditches or canals. Like irrigation canals carrying water is the heart of the king in Jehovah's hand, the original says. What does it mean? Well, the source of all decisions in the heart of any superior is his heart. And the writer says that heart that breathes out and communicates decisions and attitudes, that heart is in the Lord's hand. Just as if God would say, the main source of water that feeds the flatlands, that main source is in Jehovah's hand. In other words, wherever it may go, God is involved in the direction. Now look at the declaration. After the comparison, he declares something. He turns it wherever he wishes. He, meaning not the king, but Jehovah. Capital H is correct. Because the Lord has in his hand the heart of a king, whether he is saved or not isn't important as far as this proverb is concerned. He, the Lord, because he has the king's heart in his hand, bends it, literally, and it's in causative stem, and so it means he causes it to be bent wherever he is pleased. So putting it all together, it would read like this. Like irrigation canals carrying water, so is the heart of the king in Jehovah's hand. He causes it to bend and incline in whatever direction he pleases. Now, what is true of the king is true of your superior. The first one we have to become acquainted with and impressed by is Jehovah. The Lord has the heart of your superior in his hand. Nehemiah chapter 2 is a beautiful illustration of that truth. Now that proverb in 21:1 is a perfect prelude for Nehemiah 2, because Nehemiah worked under a man who was the king of Persia. We don't know a lot about Persia, but we have a saying in America that goes like this. Don't try to change it. It's like the law of the Medes and the Persians. Meaning what? Meaning it's impossible to change it. Now, Artaxerxes was the king of the Medes and the Persians. In other words, he was, like so many of them, he was impossible to change. Nehemiah worked for him. He worked under him, as the last verse of the previous chapter says, he was the cupbearer. He served the king his meals. He tasted them to be sure they were not poisoned. He was in the intimate part of the king's life in that he was able to frequent the private chambers of the king, as we see him in this place in chapter 2. But Nehemiah's heart was not in Persia, though he was there physically. His heart was in Jerusalem. He wanted to go back and rebuild those walls. But he couldn't just leave his job. God had to work through the heart of the king. And because Nehemiah knew the only way to move Artaxerxes God's way is to pray for him, then most of the previous chapter has been a prayer. Look at verse 11 of the previous chapter. Lord, I beseech thee, may thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant, and the prayer of thy servants who delight to revere thy name. Now look at the request. And make thy servant successful today, and grant him compassion before this man. I was the cupbearer to the king. Lord, I ask you to change the heart of the king. Move those events in his life. Change the situation so that I might be allowed to do your will with his pleasure. That is, the pleasure of my superior. He didn't rashly run to Jerusalem. He laid it before God. Will you look right after the period in verse 11? To the first word in chapter 2, verse 1, there is a space, a blank space. That's precisely what happened after he prayed. Nothing. In fact, you look at verse 1 and you'll see how long nothing happened as far as Nehemiah was concerned. It came about in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes. Hold your place and go back a page to verse 1 of chapter 1. I want to show you something. Now, it happened in the month Chislev, in the 20th year, while I was in Susa, the capital. Chapter 2, verse 1. It came about in the month Nisan, in the 20th year. Chislev is December. Nisan is April. What am I saying? 4 months of waiting. That's what we're saying. Nothing happened. Have you ever had that experience? It's the most disillusioning thing in the world. You hear on Sunday, the preacher says, pray to God, give him this situation. And so you go home and you pray. You know, the favorite American prayer, Lord, give me patience and I want it now. And so you lay before the Lord this situation. Lord, here's this situation. Take care of it. Monday morning, nothing has changed. A month from then, nothing has changed. Lord, are you awake? Do you hear me? Another month passes, and another month. That's what Nehemiah experienced. Hand in hand with the prayer warrior is the patience of waiting. And so he was. That kind of man. In this diary that he has kept, nothing has been entered in these 4 months because nothing has happened. He's waited. Now let's look further. It was in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes that wine was before him. And I took up the wine and gave it to the king. I think the Living Bible puts it so well. One day in April, 4 months later. And here he was in this familiar situation. The king and his queen were lying together and reclining together and finishing their meal, and the sumptuous delight and the smell of this delicious meal was all over, and he poured them some of their favorite vintage from the vine, and he brought it to them. And it says, I took up the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence. Now that is remarkable. You know how you can tell people that want you to know they've been praying a long time? Look at them. They want to show you how very spiritual they are, and they show it in their face, usually a long face. Whatever may be called it, a spiritual look. They usually wear that face. Now, Nehemiah didn't have that face. For 4 months he didn't have that face. That's incredible, isn't it? I mean, we wait 3 or 4 hours and we've got the face worked out to a special kind of look so that nobody can doubt that we are really in prayer about something. Nehemiah left it with the Lord, said, Lord, take over. At your timing, I'm going to rest it with you. And he says, I had not been sad in the presence of the king. Now, maybe this was Blue Monday. And nobody's perfect. Everybody has a breaking point. And Nehemiah had come to the place where he had just begun to wonder, is it going to happen? So he was sort of sad when he served them the wine. And the king said to him, why is your face sad, though you're not sick? This is nothing but sadness of heart. Then I was very much afraid. I appreciate the honesty of Nehemiah. Most people, when they become leaders, will no longer admit their human weaknesses, not Nehemiah. He says, when the king said that to me, I was scared. Now, why was he afraid? Well, for one thing, when you're sad in the presence of the king of Persia, you usually are killed for it. So that was one thing that would probably lead him to be a little bit afraid. And then there were other things that were heavy on his heart. He was sad. Benjamin Disraeli has said this: everything comes if one will only wait for it. And Nehemiah perhaps had begun to question Disraeli's words as he began to work again, the beginning of the fifth month. And the king says, "Why are you sad?" Now, will you notice the interchange in these verses? Look at verse 2. The king said, verse 3, I said. Verse 4, the king said. Verse 5, I said. Verse 6, the king said. Verse 7, I said. Interesting message, isn't it? Back and forth, back and forth. It's like reading a play where the one who is speaking has his name underlined, and then he has his line. And then the next one has his line. It's a diary. Nehemiah's recording for us in his journal that has now been preserved through time exactly what took place back and forth. But what is interesting is that before his lines are given, he tells us the feelings. But he didn't know the feeling of the king. All he could give us were the king's words. So you have the king's words and then his feelings and then his words. Then the king's response, his feelings, and then his line. Look at it again. The king said to me, verse 2, why is your face sad though you're not sick? This is nothing but sadness of heart. I was very much afraid. There are his feelings. Read those feelings into that next verse. That's why he puts them there. I said to the king, let the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies desolate and its gates have been consumed by fire? Why shouldn't I be afraid? Why shouldn't I be sad? Verse 4, then the king said to me, what would your request? That's the greatest moment in Nehemiah's life for the last 4 months. That's what you call an open door that God has opened. And Nehemiah instantly prayed. He asked, I'm sure, for wisdom in knowing what words to use, how to express his desire to the king. By the way, have you ever been in the midst of answered prayer? You know, you prayed and waited and prayed and waited and waited, and then finally the door is flung open. And there's a moment that you stand there and you just can't believe it. And so at that moment you say, oh God, this is such a critical point. Help me to take these steps very, very carefully. That's precisely where Nehemiah was. God had thrown the door open. What is it that you'd request? You see, the king's heart is in the hands of Jehovah. And God had adjusted the thinking of the king so that he was wide open. What do you want, Nehemiah? What's worth getting sad over? And so I prayed. And with a prayerful tone, he responds. Verse 5, if it pleased the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it. Now that's the statement. That's the answer. That's the request. He had asked it of the Lord, and then he said, change the heart of the king. 4 months later, the king says, what do you want? He names it before the king. Now look at the response. Beautiful. The king said to me, how long will your journey be, and when will you return? The last part of verse 6 says, I gave him a definite time. This tells me, first of all, that they didn't want him to go. He was doing a good job. His attitude was still positive toward being a cupbearer, and that's a rare, rare person. When your heart is somewhere else, it is really hard to do a job where you are. And some of you are already nodding in agreement. That's where you are perhaps right now. Your heart isn't where you're working, it's somewhere else. But for 4 months, he had faithfully done his job. So the king didn't say, man, I've been looking for a way to get rid of you. Thank God, go on to Jerusalem. He said, when will you come back? Look at this marvelous response. I gave him a definite time.
Well, hold your place right here, because we're going to pick up Chuck Swindoll's message tomorrow right at this point. He titled today's message, Preparation for a Tough Job. To learn more about this ministry, visit us online at insightworld.org. We know that many pastors and other support members of the church have found this study on Nehemiah very helpful. You might want to give your pastor the classic book that Chuck wrote on Nehemiah. Like this broadcast series, it's called Hand Me Another Brick, Timeless Lessons on Leadership. In his book, Chuck shows us how Nehemiah's wise leadership provides a model for practical issues, such as how we handle deadlines, setbacks, criticisms, and conflicts. It's a must-read book for anyone in leadership. And you can purchase a copy right now by going to insight.org/store. Did you know that Insight for Living has a website filled with a variety of resources and study guides? You can also read Chuck's daily devotional, the topical articles he's written, and watch the brief video insights he's recorded for you. To learn what's available for you today, visit us online at insight.org. These resources are made possible because grateful listeners like you give voluntary donations. In fact, we couldn't function without your help. There's no large church or institution underwriting our expenses. From the very beginning, Insight for Living Ministries has been fully supported through people like you. So thanks so much for remaining faithful in your much-needed charitable giving. To give a donation, call us. If you're listening in the United States, call 800-772-8888. Or you can give a donation online at insight.org. I'm Bill Meyer. Chuck Swindoll's signature series on leadership called Hand Me Another Brick continues next time on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Preparation for a Tough Job, was copyrighted in 1974, 1983, 1990, 2006, and 2015, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2016 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.